Hey guys, welcome to episode 216 of the podcast with my very, very belated boy of summer, Todd Anderson. He plays, of course, my obnoxious, ridiculous husband, Vernon, on the fantastic show, You're the Worst. And we had just been trying to go back and forth with getting our recordings done. And finally, we were able to stitch together the last of it very recently. And I just didn't want to sit on it. What am I going to sit on it for a year? So here it is for your enjoyment. I need to get caught up on shout outs, but thank you so much to those of you who already have watched the LA Podfest show. You guys have the opportunity to see not just that show on video, but also all of the shows from Podfest for just $20. And all you have to do is go to lapodfest.com and enter the code JV Club. And I strongly encourage you to do so. I saw a few shows while I was there and I loved them. And I think it's beyond worth $20. So I think you should do it. But listen, I don't troll for you guys to spend money on anything related to me very often. But I mean, I really recommend it. If for just my podcast and Stuff You Should Know alone, but also Never Not Funny and Comedy Film Nerds and just a million others. So that is something you can do. LAPodFest.com, enter the code JV Club, and you'll have almost a whole month to watch a million of these shows. Okay, and enjoy this episode. And I'll talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yeah.
What, my duet by Apogee?
Yeah, what is that? A duet by Apogee? Is that one word?
You made it sound like it was like a Munchichi, like a Pokemon of the Pokemon variety.
Munchichis are soft and cuddly.
That's true. Is that part of their little song?
Munchichi, Munchichi, oh, so soft and cuddly, with the thumb in the mouth, they're really sweet. Ah, la, la.
Okay, first of all, that is
happy
of lazy... Happy. Jingle where you're just describing what you're staring at. I forgot that they had their thumb in their mouth.
Yeah, it was gross.
Like it made you feel okay as a thumb sucker to have a toy that
it was encouraging
thumb.
Thumb sucking.
Can you pull the thumb in and out?
Yeah, you could. You could. It would, but it was very controversial because
you're not supposed to suck your thumb.
You're not supposed to suck your thumb. It was like My Puppy Puddles.
That puppy pees.
Yeah. It peed on the paper, but what happened was you'd give it to the kids, and the kids were like, that's great, and they peed on the paper.
Oh, no.
And so it was taken off the market because there was just too much urine.
There was that was the year that there was too much urine in America. I remember Time reported on it.
The whole country smelled like kids' piss.
That's funny because I feel like nowadays, don't you feel like there's so many toys... Like, if you're going to, like, if there's, if I guess if you're able to track that specific of a correlation, that's one thing. But that starts to lean hard into the argument of, like, well, this toy gun or, like, this game that involves shooting.
Like, well, it's sort of like
the extreme version of that.
A while ago, they took those gummy, you know, those candy cigarettes off the market because they're encouraging kids to smoke. But they're back.
Yeah.
You can find them.
Did you? I don't remember I guess I do remember candy ones, but mostly I like the gum ones because they were wrapped in wax paper, but there was a little powdered sugar or something in there.
Yeah,
so
and
you could
puffed
puff
on it. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
I didn't mean candy. I meant gum. I mean, is gum not
gum,
candy?
But not gummy. Because gummy sounds like it's like wiggly, like a gummy worm, which would kind of be a fun, woo.
Like a...
That
don't smoke,
kind of
kids. It's too gummy.
Yeah. I think kids would not want to smoke if they thought the cigarettes were like gummy worms and then took a bite and it was...
Yeah.
Nothing but a...
Yeah, it just
a
tastes
dry,
like garbage.
Yeah. A dry, garbagey grass taste. Todd, we're going to do this MASH game.
Fantastic.
Because it's such a fun component of the podcast anyway, and I think it is kind of a good way to learn about someone on the off chance. And I also would refer people...
Why don't you start
to the
with the MASH game always? Why do you end with the MASH game?
Listen, I've thought about it.
How much time have you spent thinking about it?
Days.
Is it like, are there sleepless nights?
I had to go on a cabin retreat with myself and just took off all my clothes and ran around outside naked and afraid, copyright, whatever that's on. And I still wasn't able to start. Well, here's why. Because the information that I usually get in the podcast helps me think like, oh, I know this person's not like sports, so I'm not going to make a sport. You know what I mean?
Right. It informs what you ask in the
match
game. But
I feel like we know each other well enough that I'm not too worried about
this. Yeah, you don't really
need
to talk to me first to ask me match questions.
I know I don't need to look at you or refuse to make eye contact with you.
You shouldn't.
But will you tell these guys about our episode of your podcast that we did together? Because that's also a good reference point.
We did an episode of my podcast called The Toncast, TONNCAST, where every week the host is different, but the very special guest is always me.
Yes.
And you hosted that podcast, and we talked about movies for an hour.
It wasn't necessarily what we were planning, but both have very strong and nerdy opinions about movies.
We do.
And there's a good, like, of the Venn diagram, there's a pretty good circle crossover of stuff we're passionate about, but then we're also interested in the encyclopedic nerd knowledge of the other for things that we don't know as well.
Because we like 80s stuff.
Yeah.
But I was more action horror, and you're more like romantic comedy. But I liked a lot of those romantic John Hughes type sitches. You know what I just watched the other day?
What?
Pretty in Pink.
So good.
Holds up.
So good. I think it holds up too. I auditioned for a movie that Howie Deutsch, who directed that movie, was doing, and he doesn't direct really anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of those like, I don't even care if I'm right for this or not. This was early on in my move to Los Angeles. I was like, I just want to know I was in the room auditioning for the person who directed this movie that was so iconic in my childhood, you know, my teenagerhood.
The problem I had with it now, though, is because of the nostalgia.
Yeah.
Like, I was crying for most of the second half of that movie.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Some Kind of Wonderful. I think Some Kind of Wonderful is directed by Howie Deutsch.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I'm sure
those
John Hughes
are
directed
easily
Pretty in
confused.
Pink.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason for me to have confused them other than that I was imagining Eric Stoltz instead of Molly Ringwald.
Right. Similar themes, you know, like the friends, lovers, you know, friend zone versus lover zone.
Exactly.
Stuff happens.
Exactly right. John Cryer, who I've never watched 2.5 Men. I'm sure it's great.
My Nana loves that show.
Okay. Well, shout out to your Nana.
Hey, Nana.
Nana, could you come in here, please, to this trailer?
Oh,
she's
Nana.
Just been standing around the backside of the trailer.
How you doing, Nana?
Feel bad. I told her this was going to happen a long time ago today.
She
would
know who I am, let alone you.
Could we convince her that you are on 2.5 Men?
We probably could.
Okay, great.
Yeah, let's do that.
But he's been co-hosting this, or hosting, I guess, this podcast that I love called Undisclosed, which is Rabia Chowdhury's podcast, who is the person who brought the Adnan Syed case to Serial.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so they've gone into a second season, and now they're attacking this whole other crazy case where this person seems to be falsely imprisoned. And they'll do an episode where they just give a bunch of information, and then they will do a following episode where they sort of answer questions and have a panel of people who aren't necessarily the people who were giving that information on the podcast.
Right.
And John Cryer volunteered himself to host it, and his fees all go to various sort of legal causes that he believes in.
Sure.
But I have to say he's really adorable because he totally gets, like, he's very self-effacing about, like, I know you guys, why is Ducky hosting this podcast about the legal system?
Yeah.
And it's just nice to sort of, when somebody is, like, goofy like that,
well,
it also kind of, you know,
when he lip syncs that song.
Yeah.
It is one of the greatest moments in 80s movie history. It's amazing.
Yeah, it was wonderful. It's hard to imagine anyone else playing that role, you know?
No, I can't imagine anyone playing it. Yeah. I mean, I think maybe I could have.
You probably could have.
If I wasn't in my small town.
Well, you went from, I can't imagine anyone else playing it, to saying you would play it.
I say that a lot. I just yesterday said that about Rambo. So it's not
similar,
really.
Similar roles.
I have an ego thing.
Similar roles. I understand. Yeah. I appreciate that.
I feel like I have a lot of range.
You have a tremendous amount of range. From Rambo to Ducky and back again. Listen, I'm going to use that to get right into this MASH category.
Okay.
Let's go with, you don't have to choose those two, but let's go with, we're altering history here.
Sure.
And so not only we're moving forward into this fictitious MASH universe, we're also moving backwards. And many people maybe don't remember that you starred as these characters in these three movies, they think in their mind, like, if we were to say Rambo, they're like, oh, I thought that was Sylvester Stallone. You're like, no, remember, it was Todd. So what three characters, seminal characters, did you actually play?
One was Ferris Bueller. Great. In the film Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Wonderful.
It was very charming and wonderful.
A little rapscallion.
I was a rapscallion. Mm-hmm. It was about having fun. But my darker side, my heavier side, I played Dirty Harry.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
You did. All five Dirty Harry films, including Great. The Deadpool.
Great.
And finally, I played, and this is crazy. Mm-hmm. people totally forget that this is me. But I played the evil, all-powerful alien in the film Stargate.
Oh, wow. Sure.
Very sexy. Yeah. Kind of a pansexual vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
I was really...
God, I did forget that was you. Now that I'm thinking about it, though, it's clear to me that
yeah, people forget, you know, because it was such an amazing performance.
You really get lost in these roles.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, let's do, I promise that I'll walk away from movies a little bit in a second.
Oh, why?
But why bother?
The only thing I like.
Let's do three movies that you can jump into, not to be one of the characters and not to go through the plot of the movie, but just to hang out in that world. It's going to be where your vacation home is, essentially. You kind of vacation into
Right. Yeah, I've heard you ask this question on your podcast because I listened to it. And okay, so one is, and this is weird again, very strange, but I think I'd like to hang out like at least during the first act or so of The Thing.
Oh, okay.
John Carpenter's The Thing. You know, with all the guys and Kurt Russell, hang out with MacReady or whatever his name was.
I get it.
I would hang out there. It seems scary and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I would just like to hang out. But we can pop in and out of this.
That's right.
When I get tired, I can just jettison myself.
100%.
Okay. Another movie. This is creepy, straight up creepy, but probably Behind the Green Door.
Okay.
Because that looks like a fun...
Wait, what's Behind the Green Door?
It's that porn movie with Linda Lovelace.
Okay, all right.
You know, it's
I've
like...
I've got your honesty.
It's like a orgy room with a sex show.
Sure.
It seems like a fun place to go.
You know what? There was a time at which I might have answered like on the risky business train. So I can't fault you for that.
Yeah. Boy, did I wear out that VHS. That spot on that VHS tape stopped working. Let me see. And a third movie I'd like to hang out in. I'm going to go The Wizard of Oz. And I'm not even a musical guy, but I always really liked The Wizard of Oz and I like that kind of road trip vibe, so I would do that.
Have you done the Dark Side of the Moon thing?
Yeah, I don't hear it. Yeah, no.
You don't?
I mean, there's
like
some coincidences.
You tried to sync them up, but you're just like, this is a stretch.
Yeah, people are just looking for that.
Yeah. Someone, in a recent conversation about that, someone was like, I mean, you know, has anyone asked Pink Floyd if that was their intention? And I was like, no, and no one should. Actually, I don't know if maybe someone did. But to me, that's a very postmodern thought. Like, it's very postmodern. It seems like 90s. That's when I feel like I heard about it. And I don't know if that's something people were talking about up till then.
I think the late 80s is when I heard it first, it just seems very
postmodern. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that when you're Pink Floyd and you're writing an album, I don't think you're thinking that consciously about some other thing in pop culture and going like, you know, it would be cool.
Right.
Like, I just feel like
I read this interview one time with Phil Collins, the great Phil Collins.
No one's arguing with you.
And they asked him about that song In the Air Tonight.
Yeah.
Which everybody had this whole...
They're like, he witnessed a murder.
He witnessed a murder. And then he like watches the murderer drown and doesn't help him. Yeah. And it was a revenge thing.
Yeah.
They asked Phil Collins about that. Is that what the song's about? And he said, no. I just made up those lyrics that day on the spot, but I think it's great that that's what everybody thinks.
Well, it's that idea of reinterpreting art, you know.
Pink Floyd would probably just say no.
Yeah, Pink Floyd would be like, excuse me, can our work speak for itself, please?
This interview is over.
This interview is over. Okay, wonderful. All right, Wizard of Oz, great. Okay, let's do three. Let me do three musicians.
Uh-huh.
They're your buddies. Call them up. You can go see their shows. Hang out with them. They write songs about you.
Ooh.
That's a little twist I just threw in. Three.
All right. So the first two are going to be hard to relate to. I'll go most obscure first.
Okay. All right.
This guy named Matt King.
Okay.
He did this album called Rube. He's like an alternative country guy.
Okay.
It's really dark, guitar-driven mm-hmm. country music. It's awesome.
Do you like Richard Buckner? Do you know who that is?
I'm not sure. No, I don't think so.
He's someone, he has this very strange kind of, I guess he's country, but the same sort of thing. And like his lyrics are very odd and you don't really know what he's singing about. Anyway.
This guy's lyrics, I wouldn't call them odd. I just call them really dark. They're sort of about the underbelly of America, you know, like
Garth like, Brooks' altered ego dark.
Yeah, but with like about like cooking meth and shit like that.
Oh, okay,
you know?
Makes sense. Yeah. That sounds like it like would be the Breaking Bad of country music.
Yeah, or like, did you see that movie Out of the Furnace with Christian Bale and Woody Harrelson?
No.
And Casey Affleck?
Oh, no. But so those three guys all really know how to do hardcore movies, so.
They do, and this is like super white trash. That's what Matt King's music sounds like.
Gotcha.
Is that movie.
Okay.
So Matt King, oh shit, I only get three, huh?
That's right.
God damn it.
It's the nature of the beast.
All right, I'm going to go... This is even more obscure.
Great.
This is a guy... his name was Alan Mirakatani.
Okay.
He passed away a couple years ago. He was the front man of this band called the Buddha Heads, which was an L.A. Roadhouse blues band. So good.
Yeah.
His stage name was B.B. Chung King. And I love this music. He actually, my wife surprised me on my 40th birthday party, and all my friends pooled their money together, and he played in my backyard.
Oh, shit. That's a classic there.
It was awesome.
That's great.
It was awesome.
Well, Alan Mirakatani.
That's two. And then three, I'm going to go with Ben Folds.
Okay, great.
Martin Sexton was the other guy mm-hmm, I was thinking, mm-hmm. but I know I only get three, so I just shout out to Martin Sexton.
It's possible you know personally that Ben Folds is a great guy.
It's possible. I had a half hour conversation with him.
It's possible. I saw some of that half hour conversation happening. I was as happy I am your work wife, so I was standing in for Hillary,
right,
as your happy wife.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do. Let me do three. I'm going three superpowers.
Three superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, flying is one.
Mm-hmm.
I would like the power. Is like having like all the trivia knowledge a power?
Sure.
All right.
Because I don't think that's going to be... That is supernatural. Like, that's not a skill
like all the
you
trivia,
can ever have.
Yeah. Like, I can't lose parlor games.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Good. Definitely a good use of
I
this.
I might like more parlor games if I had that power.
Yeah.
Man.
I just like that you call them parlor games, because that really takes me back to finer times.
Yeah, when mm-hmm. there were parlors and yeah. people had games in them.
Uh-huh.
Those are good days. I guess another one would be, the power to heal.
Okay, wonderful.
There you go.
Just as important as the ability to know all trivia answers.
Super Jesus-y.
He's the biggest superhero of them all.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let me do, gotta get in the perennial favorite, three foods in our alternate universe that are wonderful for you, whereas here, not so wonderful for you. You can have without any
pizza
ramifications
of all kinds.
Yes.
Whiskey
mm-hmm,
of
mm-hmm.
the single malt scotch
yep.
variety.
This is how the game is played.
And I'm going to go with fuck it. I'm just going to add beer to that. I'm just going to have whiskey, beer, and pizza.
Wonderful.
Which sounds like a really good Saturday night.
These are the standards, and I think it's great.
Yeah, there's not, I can't get too fancy, I guess, with that stuff.
Well, you love what you love.
I'm not going to fuck around.
What am I going to say? Beef cordon bleu? Like, that's not
that sounds
on the top of my list. That just sounds like heartburn. And I realize that this category allows you to remove that heartburn. But I associate it so negatively now with the feeling that I don't even crave it.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah.
But there are still things I know I couldn't eat that I still would really want. Yeah. Like, I haven't let go of it just because it would make me feel sick. So, sorry, beef cordon bleu.
Sorry.
Also possible. I've never even had that. Okay. Next category. All due respect to your wonderful wife.
Oh.
This can be someone from any time or place. It could be a fictional person. It could be just a character that an actor played. It could be the actor. Any age.
So like a person that, like a famous character or person,
yeah.
Not just like an arbitrary person.
Yeah. If you're going to list some girl you went to school with, like, goody for you, but
right. But who cares about that shit? Yeah. It's more fun this way. All right. This is, okay. I'm going to go back to porn.
Great.
And I'm going to go with 90s porn star Debbie Diamond.
Okay. What was special about Debbie?
She just seemed really crazy. She made crazy faces. She was a dedicated performer.
Okay, great.
And a consummate professional. I'm going to go with her.
Oh.
I'm going to go with... Okay. All right, I want to pick a movie star.
Yep.
I'm going to go with Angela Bassett.
Okay, great.
For some reason, I'm picturing her in that space movie she did with James Spader, which is not good. But for some reason, that was the image that popped into my head. So Angela Bassett.
Great.
And why didn't I picture her with three boobs in that American Horror Story is Beyond Me? I went right to whatever that movie is. And then finally, again, I'm going to go back to Stargate, and this is super weird, but I'm going to go with Jay Davison in Stargate.
Great.
Because I remember seeing in The Crying Game where he's, you know, the twist is that he's not a woman. And the whole time I was like, that looks like a dude.
Right, right.
And not an attractive woman at all.
But they achieved.
But then in Stargate, I was like, oh, I was confused.
I have strange feelings.
I was confused.
I'm very pleased because you gave the straightest male answers I've ever heard for certainly pizza, whiskey, and beer. Now I'm really just like, I'm tunnel visioning all of this. It's not fair of me. But I'm very excited that you picked Jay Davidson. I think that's very progressive of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
He was captivating.
He was captivating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was James Spader also on Stargate?
Yeah. I want to fuck a lot of people who are... Adjacent to James Spader.
Well, I wanted to fuck James Spader, so...
There you go. I get it.
I don't think I'm there anymore. Sorry, Blacklist.
Pretty in Pink.
Yeah.
I
liked him as a jerk and everything. I loved it. And then I saw him in White Palace, which is a very sexy movie with Susan Sarandon. And still torture. And then Secretary. Like, he was really picking the good... Like, slightly subversive,
and
sexy.
Sex Lies and Videotape.
And Sex Lies and Videotape.
To this day, it's one of my favorite movies.
Absolutely.
Like, that movie changed the way I looked at movies.
Yeah.
And sex. And I wasn't an adult really yet, but looking into adulthood.
And every other movie after that changed the way I thought I felt about Andie MacDowell. Because I thought she was a wonderful actress.
Yeah.
And then I struggled through many films.
How were you with her performance in Shortcuts?
I didn't mind that one. Because when she really loses it, I kind of bought it. Like, I thought she... I think the key with her is... And this is true with Soderbergh as a director in general. and maybe we've talked about this, it wouldn't surprise me if he had, but like, I think he pulls out really phenomenal performances from people. I'm not saying I think J-Lo's bad in other stuff per se, but I've never seen her be like she was in Out of Sight.
Oh no, I totally agree. You know what I mean? I absolutely agree.
I think he really gets some phenomenal performances
actually,
out of people.
Laura San Giacomo has never been better than she was. I mean, she was so
strongly
sexy.
Agree.
In that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Peter Gallagher, same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
James Spader's the only one I feel like I felt as good in almost everything he does as he was in that movie.
Right. And well, I mean, I think the exception is I felt that he really put some shackles on Sasha Grey in The Girlfriend Experience. She wasn't showing it.
Started watching it, was terribly bored.
It was just another bad porn joke. Uh-huh.
And now that's a show, The Girlfriend Experience.
Yeah, I hear it's okay. I haven't watched it. I don't know. I'm not into shows about hookers and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
No, it's not really my cup of tea either.
No.
I've never done this before. I've never done this before. We've picked you some alternate universe companions. I want you to pick some for Hillary because I probably won't podcast her in the near future because I never see her. Why don't you give her like what's going on with her while all this business is happening with you?
All right.
This is a nice gift.
First and foremost.
Yeah.
You know what for Hillary?
Yeah.
Carl Urban.
Okay.
Carl Urban.
Uh-huh.
And Carl Urban.
Okay, great.
Because I want her to have Carl Urban. She loves Carl Urban.
He's someone who I think is great in everything he does.
Mm-hmm.
He's sexy. He definitely has a sort of Brad Pitt good looks, right? But to me, more interesting looking.
He's rough around the edges.
Rough around the edges. He, that's what you need.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm surprised that he's not more of the sort of blockbuster leading man, but maybe he just has chosen not to be because he likes more character-y roles.
Maybe. That's a really good question. Yeah. I mean, I think the main thing about Carl Urban, well, I think he likes kind of genre fare. Because did
you
see Dread?
Yeah.
Where he's wearing a goddamn helmet the whole time. It's just his mouth.
Yeah.
And he's really good as Dread, and it's a really good movie. Totally underrated and underseen.
Yeah.
But I just, to me too, I think he's a proper man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He's that guy that the ladies like and the men want to be and the children want to grow up to be like or whatever that phrase is. Yeah.
Okay. For my last category, would you like the Disneyland turns into something real category? Please hold on, guys. We're getting called on to set. We're very important actors. Okay. Resuming.
A mere 2-day
That's
interim.
Right. Do you remember what you said for these other MASH answers?
I remember a lot of them.
Yeah.
And I regret some choices. And I feel like there were omissions.
Well.
But the cool thing about that is I think normally your listeners, they hear about that retroactively from you. But they don't get to really experience someone full of regret.
Yeah. This is what it looks like audio-wise. This is me staring it in the face. Audio-wise,
yes.
Well, listen, we only had one category left when we were pulled away. We could be pulled away at any moment.
Yeah, it could happen
again.
This
really adds a sense of tension to the show that I'm very excited about.
Yeah.
I'm
on the edge.
We're both on the edge, audio-wise. And the last category I'm going to do, let's do like a skill. So you sort of wake up tomorrow and you've downloaded a skill, Matrix style, 3.
Well, first and foremost, because of my regret of leaving the Step Up franchise out of any choices I have, I'm just going to go full Lord of the Dance, master of all dances.
Wonderful.
But with a specialty in hip hop, probably.
Wonderful. Okay. Yeah, that's a really good choice.
So I can be like a step up kid.
Yeah. No. That's strong.
It is strong.
What are you going to do for your other two?
One is an ability to learn any instrument in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
All
mm-hmm.
instruments.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And 3 is a incredible medical scientific knowledge so I can cure all sorts of problems that
Wonderful.
People have.
Terrific. That's a lot of pressure to put on yourself.
It is, especially because I don't know if you ever saw the movie Medicine Man, but what if I lost the cure to cancer?
Is that Sean Connery?
That is Sean Connery.
I've never seen it. Oh. Is he? I imagine him in a safari outfit going through the jungle.
He's a scientist and he misplaces the cure for cancer. That's what the
whole movie
is.
Does he know where his car keys are? But he doesn't know where
he doesn't need a car. He's in the jungle.
Yeah.
I don't think he needs a car.
Wouldn't do him any good.
But he's really mad because he can't find the cure for cancer.
What form does a cure for cancer take?
I can't remember that, but I think, I don't know, it was probably like a some kind of chemical or something that he couldn't find.
That's tough. Is it related in any way to Lorenzo's oil?
I don't know. It's not quite that depressing.
Okay.
I remember that.
All right. And also got, didn't see Lorenzo's oil.
It's got the, you know, the psychiatrist from Sopranos there.
Yeah.
She's in that.
Oh, Lorraine Bracco.
That one.
Bracco,
yeah.
Okay.
And they have kind of a, you know, a, I guess you'd call it a sexual tension. But he's very upset.
Again, none of us wanted to watch him having sex with someone when he's just lost a cure for cancer.
No. And really don't want, after like 1977, don't really want to watch him have sex, period.
You know what? I can't agree with that because I love Never Say Never Again, and that is for sure in the 80s.
Yeah, but did you want to see him humping in that one?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know what I love about that one? That's the one with Kim Basinger, right?
Mm-hmm.
The out of canon James Bond.
Yep.
There's that shot where the evil guy kisses her.
And he's wonderful.
And that he's really good. But that kiss, there's like this gross string of spit.
Yes, I totally remember that string of spit. Yeah. Remember how she had that like dance studio and she was wearing like kind of flash dance type clothes?
Uh-huh.
And he had like from his evil lair booth, he could like stop killing people and pressing buttons that would ruin the world,
right?
And just look at her taking dance lessons.
That's
on the yacht.
Where that novelist lady got the idea for Room. It's like the same.
Oh, interesting.
Same concept.
And that's and Never Say Never Again is a remake of a different
Thunderball.
Okay.
I want to say Thunderball. Yeah, underwater. Yeah. Underwater.
What I will say about that, and then we'll finish up this MASH game, but might as well draw this out because it will be really funny if we get called to set and I still haven't given you your answers. Is that has one of those classic underwater cave sets?
The Never Say Never.
Never Say Never. Yeah. Probably Thunderball too, but
well, at the time Thunderball had the most ornate underwater sequence.
I'm sure it led to that. But that was like all the scuba kind of, and same with this one where they're like moving a warhead under the water.
Right.
But they bring it up to this underground temple, and like that probably would have been, if it hasn't been, it would have been a MASH answer for me. With like this place you can only get to that's full of treasure and like old. I have an ant crawling on me. Yeah,
right.
we got called to set. This is what we were hoping for. Well, my friend, the results are in.
We've got
your test results.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to make it.
Oh, that I could have told you just from the way I've been feeling lately. That
I was in trouble.
Very achy.
I really should not have become a doctor. okay. For those of you who keep track of the MASH games, not to worry. We just did the eeny, meeny, miny offline because why not? I feel pretty good about what's happened. Now, listen. Hill was going to end up with Carl Urban no matter what.
Yeah, we knew that.
So I want you to know that she ended up with Carl Urban.
Not Keith.
No.
We didn't want to make that.
Not Carl Urban. Carl Urban.
Carl Urban. Great.
So she's happy off doing her thing.
I will let her know.
Maybe she'll come and visit you in your beautiful house inside the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Is it the one that landed on the witch?
I mean, possibly. Would you like it to have been?
Why not?
All right, great. Your murder house, your squash house.
It's not a murder. It was an accidental death.
You're right. Your manslaughter house. Your witch slaughter house.
Involuntary manslaughter house.
Okay. So that's a beautiful place to go. Now, listen, I don't know who needs this in Oz, but I certainly know many people who could use it in the real world. You and these two things lined up perfectly together, which is that tomorrow, not only do you wake up
with all medical and scientific knowledge possible, mm-hmm. but you also have the superpower of healing.
Oh, wow.
So you can actually do...
Wow.
Yeah. Very serendipitous. You can actually do some good work.
I can fix a lot of people in Oz.
Yeah. A lot of people in Oz.
Right away.
Immediately.
The scarecrow.
Get right to work. That's
boom,
right.
Gets a brain.
That's right.
Tin Man, boom, gets a heart.
That's right.
This road trip they went on, unnecessary.
So unnecessary.
Dorothy, back off.
Yeah.
Get away from them. You're too much trouble.
Yeah.
You can go to the Emerald City on your own.
And I don't know what's going on with Glinda and that boy in the bubble thing she has going on. Like, if she has some sort of respiratory illness, you're going to break her right out of that bubble.
Get her out of there.
She'll be able to travel without
her
bubble.
She will be fun. Yeah, she doesn't need that bubble.
Oh, she's going to be great. I wanted to say I also loved you as Ferris Bueller.
Oh, thank you.
What a treat.
Thank you.
Great movie. Yeah. Great performance.
It was one of those great times.
Oh, God, it was great. I know that's something that you love to talk about when you're drinking unlimited beer that has absolutely no negative effects whatsoever
on you. That's the main time I like to talk about Ferris Bueller is when I'm hammered on beer.
And you know who loves to hear about it? Ben Folds.
Oh, hey, what's up, Ben?
Your buddy Ben Folds.
Let's talk about Bueller.
That's right. Over a couple of beers. Now, the last thing I feel sure he's going to have lots of questions about, because it doesn't necessarily fall in line with some of your other choices, is how you ended up in such a loving relationship with Jay Davidson from Stargate.
Well, I mean, I think it's just kind of written in the Stargate.
It was written in the Stargate. Boo. And that wraps up our MASH game.
That was a great MASH game.
I feel terrific about it. Look, we're already 34 minutes in to this podcast, and all we did was mash it up.
That's crazy.
So I'm just going to, like, bullet point grill you, like, in the most unpleasant, impersonal way possible. Okay. Where were you a teenager?
I was a teenager in Sherburn, Massachusetts.
Sherburn sounds made up. Is it real?
It's a real place. It's next to Dover and Natick and Framingham.
Those also sound fake.
That's because I'm saying I'm in mild Massachusetts-ese.
How far is that from Pittsfield? These guys know. It's really the only time. The only main time I spent
from
was
Pittsfield,
in Pittsfield.
It's like maybe half hour.
Okay. Did you grow up on King Cone?
King Cone?
Mm-hmm. That was a place in Pittsfield that had a really great, like, frozen soft serve ice cream.
No. No, I never went. We had CNL Frosties in Sherburn. All right. It was very nice.
They was the soft Frosty serve a character, or was it just...
No, it was just called Frosty because they serve Frosty treats.
Yeah.
Both the soft and hard varieties.
Uh-huh. Sure, sure. And what was your high school like? Was it a public school, a private school?
It was it a public school, but it was very small, wealthy. So it felt like a private school.
What did your parents do?
My dad was an IBMer.
Oh, okay. Sure. You know what? My friend Meredith's dad worked for IBM. That's why they moved to Pittsfield.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had nothing to do with Pittsfield, even though he worked for IBM.
Was it in Pittsfield, IBM?
No. No.
I don't know why. That's just a weird coincidence.
He worked in both.
It's not like Massachusetts is owned by IBM.
No. I mean, he worked in both Boston for a while and then in Cambridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cambridge, college town.
Very nice college town.
Yeah.
I used to, in high school, that's where we would go. We would go to Harvard Square.
Oh, I bet.
To hang out.
Because easily identifiable as too young to be hanging out with the collegiate types?
Yeah, I was definitely, they could tell I was a kid. But we couldn't get into bars or anything. But there was a kind of a swinging scene in Harvard Square for those of us who had to stay out on the streets.
Uh-huh. I bet there was.
And there were some nice bookstores and stuff. But we used to go and listen to, you know, street musicians, including the aforementioned
Martin. Buskers?
Buskers.
Wonderful.
I apologize. Buskers. We would enjoy some busking.
Wonderful.
Including the aforementioned Martin Sexton.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Play on the street.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Were you a late bloomer high school kid, or did you, you know, were you like a shrimp until like later on, or did you hit puberty at a reasonable time?
I was, no, I mean, I think I hit puberty at a reasonable time, but I was always like really skinny.
Mm-hmm.
I was tall, but skinny, you know, I was frail. I was weak
frail.
And and easily pinned down.
Okay. And were you pinned down?
Oh, yeah. I was.
You got bullied?
I got bullied a lot.
In high school, even?
Yeah, freshman and sophomore year.
By whom? Football players? Sorry, guys. Yeah, making football assumptions. Players. And I'm right again.
Yeah, you were right. Led by a particular guy. And every day after lunch, they would gang up on me and pick me up and throw me into the girls' bathroom, just like Ducky.
Yeah.
And it was exactly like that, except it happened to me every day. So and
why
then
didn't
this,
they get tired of that?
I don't know. Crazy.
Yeah.
But the girls were very nice, and they were in there smoking, and they had a coffee maker and shit in there.
What?
So after a while,
they had a coffee maker in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they bring it in and out with them, or did it live somewhere?
No,
in the
they like lived in the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
They made coffee and had cigarettes in there.
So
it was
weird.
It was great. So I'd get thrown in there, and I'd be like, "What's up, girls?" Uh-huh. And they'd be like, "Hey, Todd, what's going on?"
Oh.
The authority again, that's what they called themselves.
Oh,
the authority.
Really? Ew, I hate these guys.
And they wore t-shirts with question marks on them, which at the time was a t-shirt that signified questioning authority,
which I
always thought was the wrong t-shirt for their group.
Yeah, that seems counterintuitive.
Because when I questioned them, I was thrown into the girls' bathroom.
And did you question them? Did you just sass them?
No, I think I sassed the leader once.
Because like after a certain point, when that's happening on a regular basis, at what point does it become so ritualized that you don't even feel what you're supposed to feel anymore? Or did you always feel
I think
fear
I kind of went through that. I mean, I went to the point where I was like, okay, guys, it's cool. And I would take myself into the girls' bathroom.
Oh, no.
Ladies, can I get a cup of Joe? Uh-huh.
Can I get a cig?
Can I get a ciggy?
Wow.
Yeah. So I went. And then I was numbed out to it. Like, I went through a phase of terror.
Yeah.
And then I went through a phase of, I don't give a shit about this anymore.
Yeah.
I'll just take my licks.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went through a phase of having had it. And that's when I went nuts on the guys and, like, was, talk about flailing, like bad fighting. But at least it was just full energy impact, and they had to get away from me because I was like helicoptering, trying to hit as many of them as I could. And then
terrible.
And then an upperclassman who I did musicals with on that day stepped in and said, guys, fuck off.
Yeah.
And then they never bothered me again.
Did you, when that happened, were you like, oh, I wish that I would have had someone else intervene earlier? Or
yeah, but I mean, I think it also, you know, he didn't know me when it started.
Yeah.
And then a lot of my buddies in my class were on the football team, but they didn't want to intervene at all because these were upperclassmen football players.
Right.
And they didn't the hazing be, in the locker room on them would have been even worse if they'd stuck up for their friend.
Right.
So, I mean, shame on them.
So everyone kind of knew this was happening. Okay. This has been certainly the most complex system of recording a friend on the podcast. You know what? I pat us on the back for being tireless. I pat us on the back for taking the opportunities when we had them on set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's more than I can say for, you know, like Dez or Chris, I still haven't gotten around to. So I'm very, very proud of us and our fake TV marriage.
Me too. For us, though, this is like, it's like a serialized cliffhanger podcast.
That's right.
That's the way we're experiencing it. Your listeners won't. They'll be like, well, why is the mesh first? What's happening? But
why don't they remember that they already said a thing that they're now saying?
I know. When we last left off, as I recall, I had taken up with Jay Davidson.
Uh-huh. So much has happened since then, but you certainly did. You certainly did.
And I told you.
Yeah, we really need a previously on.
Just for us. Yeah.
That's right.
And then I talked about being bullied, but then it's been how long ago was that?
Like 3 weeks, maybe more.
So since then, I've contracted a poison oak rash.
You really have. Oh God!
Jacked
I'm
up
so
my
sorry
foot.
That happened.
It's. But I was actually, at the rap party the other night. I was talking to one of the crew guys. I'm not going to say who because I don't want to embarrass him. But he admitted to me, oh, yeah, I got it all over. I got it on my dick. And I was like, oh, thank Christ. Thank, I'm so sorry, man. Thank Christ that did not happen to me. I got it close. I got it close on my thighs and shit, but I was at least good enough. I was washing before and after that day just because my hands were so friggin' full of dirt and stuff. But
well, that was my next question because I've never gotten either poison oak or poison ivy to the point where I've sort of done that really stupid thing where I've kind of decided maybe I'm immune, which I guarantee you is not true. I've probably just gotten really lucky because I've made a lot of really stupid decisions, and I can't imagine that I haven't brushed past it at least once or twice, particularly like in Griffith Park when I'm kind of going off-road.
Yeah.
But I think for whatever reason, but like the chances that I'm immune to it seem infinitesimally small. I don't know, but it's sort of has this oily thing that if you touch other parts of your body that didn't make direct contact with it, you can also get it there. Is that?
Yeah. Here's what I relearned because it's been so long. Because I used to get poison ivy. I'm really reactive to it, and I used to get it growing up all the time. But you know, East Coast poison ivy over here, it's more a poison oak thing. But I guess the chemical makeup of the oil on the plant is the same thing, and poison sumac. Gotcha. So if you're allergic to one, you're allergic to all of it.
Gotcha.
But the other things that I think I probably knew this but forgot because it's been so long. But one of the things about it is you can be exposed to it, you know, 3 to 5 times before you have a reaction.
Is that true?
Yeah.
How creepy.
Yeah. It's like your immune system doesn't recognize it, so it doesn't do anything. But then after like the 4th or 5th time of exposure, then you'll break out in a rash. And the other thing I learned also the hard way this time around, which I forgot, and I think I knew this too, but it's just been so long, is that if you are exposed, whatever clothes that you were exposed in, you need to, if you're not going to burn them, if you want to keep them, you got to wash them 3 to 4 times.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, that's funny because this just comes on the tail of me having had a conversation with this wonderful comic book artist and writer, Kate Leth, who was telling me about her experience with bed bugs in Nova Scotia.
Oh, I listened to that. Yeah,
and how pernicious they are. Ooh. Yeah, and it also sounds like the same thing. It's like if you're willing to bake your clothing, or do some sort of crazy, you know, devil dance around a bonfire, holding the clothes over it. Hopefully, they won't burn all the way to crisp. But yeah, that's intense. And also, that again is the kind of thing that I would very easily like. I'm just not a grown-up enough to not have things like that happen, where if I do get exposed to something like that, or if there is a situation in which the right decision has to be made to not make something worse, I really feel like the chances are good I will make every wrong decision to where I will be the person that's like, oh no, I've had poison oak for 7 months. I guess I keep forgetting to wash my clothes, or you know what I mean?
Well, it's really easy. Like this crew guy I was telling you about, he said, you know, I had thrown my clothes in the car, you know? I got oil in my car and I can't get it out. So I keep winding up reinfecting myself with the goddamn oil in my car. So yeah. It's like it's just one of those things. There's once you get it, it's such a hassle.
Yeah.
And that, you know, on the internet says, "Oh, it'll last 5 to 12 days." That's total bullshit, because you will maybe the initial rash that showed up will be gone in 12 days, but I can guarantee more will pop up. Because of just simple oversights, and this stuff is invisible. You can't see it.
Oh, God.
So yeah, I woke up the other day. I had another one on my leg. I was like, "You got to be fucking kidding me!" And I went, the worst part is you can't sleep. You know, because even if you my treatment for a while was just getting really baked and getting in the shower and burning the shit like. Turning the hot all the way up and just like burning the shit out of the rash. so I could get like 4 to 5 hours of sleep. But that then you wake up in the middle of the night, it's itchy, and you get your whatever, your Sarna or your, you know, Bond cream in your Calamite, whatever it is, and you slather it on, but that only lasts for like 20 minutes. So you just, I haven't slept. I'm such a mess.
And you and I had that conversation too, where we both had like some weird scheduling stuff over the summer because we had several things going on and had to get to other things very quickly and without any sleep. And we're both the kind of person who feels that disruption acutely, opposed to people who are like, I don't know, I feel like I need like 1 to 2 hours a night, and then I'm gonna kind of take a couple naps during the day. And
I don't understand people like that. I'm always like, wow, I don't know how you live, because I really need to be in bed for I gotta get the 8 hours at least.
Yeah. Have you always been like that? And the other thing I was going to ask when I was thinking about the poison oak thing and the poison sumac thing was, were you an accident-prone kid?
You know, I wasn't. My brother was. But I did require a lot of sleep. And I remember at one point in high school, I wasn't getting enough sleep because I became obsessed with David Letterman. So I'd stay up to watch, and that was when he was on at 12:30, because, you know, I'm old.
You couldn't just, and like, you didn't want to just record it, or maybe you didn't have the ability to record
on a VCR. Yeah, no, I mean, I did, like, that was another thing. You know, VHS tapes, blank VHS tapes, those weren't cheap back then, you know, so I used those to, like, record movies and stuff. But yeah, I just wanted to stay up and see it when, you know, as it aired, cause it was exciting. Sure. And I had like a little, I remember it was yellow. The casing of it was this awful yellow color, and it was an old, you know, black and white TV. And I just, you know, used the antenna, and I'd stay up late to watch Letterman, but then I'd have to get up and, you know, I'd have to go to school and I'd be tired. So I was doing that for a while, and then, you know, my friends would be like, hey, are you going to come out? Let's go to the movies tonight, like in the middle of the week. And I'd be like, no, I'm too tired. And then it got back to me that I was complaining about being too tired so much that everybody thought I was full of shit and just didn't want to hang out with them anymore. And I had to have conversations with all my friends going, no, I'm really just fucking exhausted. I you know. I'm sorry.
I have this whole second job at night where I have to watch comedy. You're basically, it would have been more fun maybe for them if it had turned out that you were like the character in Summer School who was stripping at night, and that's why
I wish that's what I had been doing.
You guys know that Tata's a male stripper at night, and that's how he's saving up for college, right?
I can't imagine the reaction people would have to a ginger male stripper. It would be ridiculous. I'm just too white to strip. Too white.
Yeah, I understand. Maybe not in Ireland. I don't know. I don't know what the stripping requirements
are. No, yeah. I guess that's why I like the Full Monty so much, because it had that one ginger dude who...
Oh, I love the Full Monty. Now, remind me, because I know we started getting into school in terms of your kind of social experience with assholes, frankly, but I can't remember if you told me whether or not you're a good student. So if we talked about this, guys, get ready, because you can pretend you have a weird case of deja vu.
I was a good student. I was dedicated.
So somehow you were pulling that off, like, in addition to watching Letterman at night. Because I feel like a lot of comedy fans would have just forgone being good students and just kind of, you know.
No, I was good about it. I would come home after school. If I didn't have – it got more difficult during the – you know, when I was doing plays and stuff and musicals and whatnot, because you just have less time. But on the off season, I guess you'd call it, I was doing a lot of getting home and just getting through the homework right away. So yeah. I did that.
So
I was good.
But you didn't have, and you were talking about your friends and being tired all the time. It sounds like you didn't have, you know, buddies that you guys would come in and all be tired because you all watched Letterman. You all wanted to nerd out on how funny he was and stuff.
I also think it was, you know, it's that thing of, I really am a person and always have been who needs full sleep. And I think a lot of my friends, you know, didn't. They could just go, you know, all day and all night and sleep for 4 hours and be good, you know. Yeah. But I've never been like that. Yeah. I mean, and when say I was a good student, I just want to clarify because I don't think – like I'm of what I think is average intelligence. So I had some honors classes and some standard classes, and I had to work hard to get the A's and B's that I did. You know what I mean? Because there were people that I knew – who they were in all honors classes and they'd get all A's and they barely had to work at it.
Right.
So I wasn't that.
But, yeah. Yeah. But you had the sort of presence of mind to want to be good. Did you have aspirations at that age? Like, did you have a sense of why that was important? And I ask that because, as you know, from other episodes of the podcast, I still have this fascination with having foresight. Like, I feel like I cared, but I don't feel like, maybe I'm just misremembering, but I feel like when I was a teenager, I wasn't imagining myself in the future. I wasn't really imagining future Janet. Like, I don't know that I was imagining, like, and then I'll have my backpack and my bike at college.
Yeah. I mean, as far, I think I worked hard as a student just 'cause I'm anal retentive and, you know, in that way, not really rebellious. So I just wanted to get good grades to keep myself out of trouble. But I mean, I was, my future imaginations were all, you know, by the time I was in junior high, they were all being a movie star. That was that was all I was like, I got to get these good grades so I can get out of here and go to college. But I'm not going to use any of this shit. None of it. But yeah, that's,
don't you think that's a weird juxtaposition? Like, it's not, you know, it's not that idea is very interesting and specific because there are plenty of people who, you know, those sentences would be broken up into two halves. One would have a different beginning and the same ending as yours, or would have the same beginning and a different ending. It would be like, yeah, you know, I wanted to make sure I got really good grades because I wanted to get out of the town I was living in and go, you know, have a life and use my education and stuff. Or the person who's like, yeah, I was like, fuck school, I'm going to be a movie star. Yeah. Like, the fact that you were like, fuck school, but I will do very well so that I can then ditch all of it to be a movie star.
It really is really weird when I look back. I don't know. My life path is enigmatic, I guess. I mean, I don't even really understand it. I don't. I mean, my parents were confused as to why I always wanted to go to the movie. And I saw every movie when it came out in the theater. I mean, every weekend I would go to the movies, at least one, if not a few. And my parents were not movie people. I mean, they were barely – my dad put on the TV to watch news and sports games, and my mom was just the news. So when I ran out to do – you know, to go to the movies, they were like, why is he so – why is he always going to the stupid movies? He's crazy. They really didn't understand it.
Do you think that part of it was – I mean, is it a combination of being really – fascinated and excited by the whole concept of entertainment, but also the escapism of none of this stuff that I'm getting excited about or watching has anything to do with, you know, getting shoved into a garbage
to getting thrown into the girl's bathroom. Yeah. Like poor Ducky.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think the escapist element of it was probably why I liked it. But I mean, my parents did take me to the big ones, you know. They took me to see Star Wars when it came out. And then they took me, and my dad loved that movie, and then they took me to Raiders of the Lost Ark when it came out. And that movie
blew. That was a good, that's true, and your childhood and mine were such a great era of, like, industry-changing movies where we still talk about them being, you know, obviously those players are still heavy hitters. You know, it's like Lucas and Spielberg are still very much in the zeitgeist. It's not like, oh, remember how everyone liked this thing that, you know, there, it's like there are certain things that sort of have the quality of like, oh, the VHS tape, remember that quaint thing? Ha ha. Like, for the most part, when we talk about major like blockbusters and stuff, they're all still really relevant, you know? From that era, from that era of us being like, oh my God, Star Wars, oh my God, Indiana Jones, oh my God, you know.
Yeah, and it was...
Star Trek, all that kind of shit.
Yeah, and that 1-2 punch of Harrison Ford as Han Solo and Indiana Jones, I think really did get under my skin. And in the Raiders, I had not just, you know, an emotional reaction to it, but a physical one. Where after those faces melted off, I mean, when we came out of the theater, I thought I was going to barf.
Well, I didn't see it in the theater because my dad wouldn't let me, but.
Okay. Well, I thought I was going to barf and I was shaking from that movie that like impacted me hugely that I could have a physical reaction to a piece of entertainment. And then I think for a while, what I wanted to be was an archaeologist.
Sure. Sure. Why not?
But then, when I really, looked into it and realized that, archaeology is digging in dirt and digging up bones and looking at the bones and not, running from giant, perfectly round
rolling
boulders. I was like, oh, maybe what I like is the imaginary right. archaeology, and the place that would happen would be in the movies. So yeah. And then the other thing was, is I sucked at absolutely all the sports.
Right.
All of them. I was terrible. Right. I was in a soccer town. You know, I didn't even try football, but basketball was the strongest I was, but I was either on the bench of the good team or I was playing all the time on the really shitty team with mostly younger players, you know, and we'd lose every game because I was the best player. So, and soccer I sucked at. I got my nickname from my friend. I put that in quotes. His mom, after one of the games, they were walking away, and she said to her son, "Jesus Christ, that Anderson kid is useless." And he brought that story into gym class the next day, and then all the kids started calling me useless. So that was my nickname for a couple of years, and it stuck. And then, but then when I a teacher just said, "Hey, do you want to do this play?" It was the Butler Did It. You know that play.
I can't remember if you told me about it.
Probably,
I didn't. I may possibly even on this podcast, but if it's like the similar kind of like palatable, goofy, almost spoof versions of like murder mystery things, that is something I did. But it was called The Murder Room. The Butler Did It, kind of like that. It's sort of an Agatha Christie type spoof.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Or it's like it's like that old detective Marlowe. You know, I think even the character I was playing, who was like the goofy detective, his last name was Marlowe, but I can't remember all the details. But I did that. You know, got up the cojones. I remember being so damn nervous, but I did it. And the crowd reacted in a positive way. They laughed at my stuff. And after the show, I remember this dude, Alan Mudge, who, you know, I wasn't super close to him. Really small town. My graduating class was, I don't know, maybe I've said this on this very podcast before, but...
I don't know. God help me. I'm getting nervous that maybe we didn't establish what town you're from.
I feel like...
I'm so scared because we were so all over the place.
We've done your podcast completely in reverse of its normal format.
Yeah, this is like a memento without the tattoos, basically, is the problem that we're facing right now.
Yeah. So anyway, my graduating class, I mean, it was two towns.
In the town of?
Sherburn, Massachusetts. Okay, and it was Dover and Sherburn, Dover-Sherburn Regional High School. My graduating class was 84 students. So it was very small. But so when I say I wasn't caught, this is a guy who I'd grown up with, essentially, who said to me after this junior high play, he said, "Hey, man, you found your thing. You found your calling." And that, that was, I was like, oh, I'm good at something. Cool. Aww. I should keep.
I love that it took someone else to say, "You found your calling."
Yeah. I was like, what? Oh, yes, this must be it. I mean, and I think that's, you know, and then, you know, girls would talk to me all of a sudden. And my.
That was my next question, was wanted to just verify that that cliche actually came true.
That is absolutely true. So it my career is entirely sex driven.
You're not the first or the only, and you won't be the last.
No, I think it's totally fair. I'm a human being. That's what happens. Yeah. You know, you try to figure out how you're going to get laid, and then, you know.
Listen, you ended up with a beautiful, funny, hilarious, smart wife. So
I did, and I wouldn't have met her. Like, in the hardest years out here in Los Angeles, where I'm like, oh God, I can't get work. I'm broke. What should I do? I always remind myself that if I hadn't chased this dumb dream out here, even if it didn't work out, I wouldn't have met Hillary, and therefore there wouldn't be Colby. So, you know, in my worst years, I've been like, I'm still glad I pursued this.
Well, and ultimately that's what it should all hopefully be for all of us, right? Is that, like, that's the hardest part about you know, what I just did with Kate, which is we sort of, as sensitive humans, we kind of go back and forth thinking about regrets or thinking about, you know, this thing that I endured that I wish I hadn't had to endure, and that ultimately the desire is to be at a place in the present day where you are satisfied enough and happy enough and grateful enough about what you have, that you really, that the things you would change in your own history are smaller because you would never want to risk, you know, not ending up with the same reality, like that Ray Bradbury story that got turned into, I'm sure, like 80 different movies about stepping on a butterfly.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly how, I mean, my regrets that I would go back and change are mostly about treating other people poorly.
I think that's probably a fair. Yeah, you're like, and if I hadn't shit all over that person, I might never have met my wife. That does start to sound a little selfish.
Well, the meeting of my wife and the pursuing of my dream has really nothing to do. I don't think I ever treated anyone poorly. God, I hope I haven't. You know, but sometimes you have a bad day, and then, you know, 10 years later, somebody's like, "Hey, why were you such an asshole to me that time?" It's like, oh, shit. Yeah. All my, like, treating people poorly is more, like, social, you know, sexual, that kind of stuff. Like, being a jerk. Like, in high school when I was an upperclassman, I was a jerk to some underclassmen. I was never the bully, but, you know, I could say some mean-spirited cracks, I guess.
Do you feel like that was in reaction to, like, thank God I'm not the butt of this anymore, rather than being, like, the protective, I went through this and I would never want anyone to go through this?
Oh, yeah. It was totally upperclassman cockiness and just enjoying that sort of kind of level of power and abusing it. I mean, I didn't do it very often, but I did make fun of a couple people I shouldn't have, you know.
Well, I have them both on the phone right now.
Okay.
they're both in prison and they
Oh, Jesus.
You.
Oh, God. Sorry.
Yeah.
Guys. No, I know they're not in prison, Janet, because they're on my Facebook.
Okay, all right, well.
They're on my Facebook. Actually, the guy
Facebook,
who...
God damn it, Facebook is just too it's made armchair detectiving too available.
Yeah, it's too easy. It's too easy. But, you know, some women I maybe treated poorly. Not maybe. I treated them poorly when I was young and getting into the dating thing. Because I didn't get in. I didn't have a real sex relationship until I was almost 20. And I went through, and it wasn't for lack of trying, you know? So when I got to a certain point where I had been friend zoned so many times, You know, so many times that I started, I became rageful about it. And I was like, well, and I made a very conscious decision to start acting like an asshole because it seemed like assholes, you know, it's that cliche.
God, I really appreciate your honesty about this because it's, that's really a thing. And that's, I know that that's something, obviously you know, preface all this by saying it's not something you're proud of, but that's, it's just something that we're all capable of falling into. And I think everyone likes to think that they're going to be the person, like I said about the bullying, who's like, well, I rose to the occasion because I had gone through that and I would never want anyone to feel that way. Or, you know, I had been put in the friend zone and I would never want a girl to feel the hurt that I felt. And unfortunately, as a younger developing brain, who's emotionally sensitive and fragile in that way, it's a real crapshoot whether or not you're going to kind of go down the road of like, take that, everyone.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, my early sex life had had a vengeful quality to it, I guess. Which it sounds really weird, but I mean, it wasn't, you know, I did actually make, I'm going to be more of an asshole because it seemed, and it, you know, the truth was, is it was effective. And I was that way for a number of years. And then I woke up one day and I was like, I don't like myself like this.
Yeah.
And then I stopped being an asshole and then did not get laid for 2 years.
God, so, that's so terrible that you like were socialized to learn a behavior that works and also is detestable.
Yeah, it was weird. And I wonder,
that's all of our faults. You know what I mean? That's everyone's fault.
Well, and I think movies too and entertainment did fuck up my perceptions of the relationship between, you know, men and women. And there was, and I think it's less now. I really do. I mean, I know we still have a long way to go, but there's just so much more. I mean, and I know I have to remind myself that I live in Los Angeles and I lived in New York, and there's more progression, I guess, in this arena. But the sex positivity that exists now, but I think it's like on a national level too. There's a lot more awareness, and it's, you know, and for me that's not just about, you know, LGBT stuff. It's also just about heterosexual relationships and the idea that women aren't, because like growing up, it's like they were a separate entity completely that I in my head had to capture, had to impress, you know, had to reel in, had to catch him with a fishing line sort of thing, as opposed to we're human beings with different body parts, and there are different, you know, physical sensations, I guess, to some degree, and it's, we are different, but we're human beings, so it's not.
No, totally. And like, you know, it hasn't been that long, and I don't know what's out there right now, but when I heard about like The Game, you know, which was like the guy who wrote that book that was, it's very heterosexual. I mean, I guess it was.
Oh, like with negging and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that was not very long ago. So it is interesting when you feel like, you know, the cultural and social and, you know, equality advances that we're making with even some more marginalized groups, which I would never trade out for, you know, more with heteronormative kind of stuff. But like, it is interesting, you know, that sometimes we push so far in one category that we sort of go, oh, so I guess that must mean, if we're looking at this now, that must mean everything's all taken care of with X, Y, and Z. And that's not necessarily true. It's not like it's a thing that doesn't, you know, still have to be looked at. And then you get into the whole conversation about like people thinking that people complaining about stuff are being shrill instead of, you know, actually saying like, hey, I feel better not hating women as a straight man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I get
it's an interesting puzzle.
I get just like the whole thing. I get in debates with people, and this election has really brought it to the forefront, And I was having these arguments before all this nonsense, but people complaining about political correctness, especially comedians do a lot. And I would get in arguments with them. It's like, yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, and maybe college kids are being too sensitive or whatever. But when you think about what political correctness is, it just and can always go too far. You know what I mean? It's a delicate balance. I would agree, but I would say for me, it's been a very positive thing, and it continues to be because you know you think about stuff from your perspective, and you don't necessarily remember to, you know, walk a mile in another person's shoes.
Yeah.
Right. So when you like say have some dumb opinion about something, and then someone goes, you know, dude, that's not cool. That's, you know, offensive to me. I think a number of people will react and say, oh, don't tell me to be politically correct, blah, 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 blah. But I'm always, right. But for me, it's like, oh shit. And then I think about it from their perspective and try to imagine it. And then I go, oh shit, you're right. I'm not saying that anymore. I mean, I look back on old, you know, late night comedy shows that I used to do, and I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, I can't believe that was a joke in a show that I did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would never do it now. But I mean,
it's definitely about finding that balance and trying to, I mean, I like making fun of a lot of stuff. I don't mind being made fun of. I don't mind if certain qualities about the things I can't control, like my gender or my color, are made fun of. That doesn't mean everyone feels that way. And I feel like I am constantly kind of trying to find a balance between being sensitive and not making things worse on a societal level, but mm-hmm. also being able to satirize or being able to laugh about something painful, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. Yeah. I mean, I still like pushing the envelope with.
Yeah. And we should be, because there's stuff that gets addressed because of that kind of stuff, and that shouldn't be used as an excuse for, like, you know, unacceptable behavior in any context. But I do think that, you know, thoughtful discourse can come out of pushing the envelope in that way. And, you know, I mean, You're the Worst is a good example of doing that. Like, there's stuff in there that I'm sure offends some people, but it's to me, it's done in a way that I'm much happier it's out there in the world than not.
Yes, I agree. And I'm sure, you know, 30 years down the road, we might look back and go, ooh, maybe we shouldn't have done that joke. But maybe. I can't. It's just like those jokes that I look back on from 15 years ago. I go, ooh, I shouldn't have done that joke. But, you know, it wasn't done as an act of prejudice or making fun of a group. It was just trying to. And at the time, those things were acceptable. You know what I mean?
Right.
As comedy that pushes the envelope. So I still try to push it, but in I try to be respectful and do it in an intelligent way.
I think that's the place to come at it from, with the understanding that we all don't know what we don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we don't know how we're going to feel, but we can't. It's hard to sort of freeze yourself from doing anything that you might end up looking back on and going, oh, if I knew then, you know, again, it goes.
Yeah. Well, and some people are knee jerky if they hear any sort of crap. Like, you know, my parents would, if they watched You're the Worst, which I tell them not to do, and they have not. And in fact, every time, you know, like when we had our sex scene last season, I very specifically said, if you are a member of my family, don't watch this.
Yes.
Do not. Yes. But if you're not, then watch it. It's hilarious. Right. And my brother didn't listen to me and texted me, you know, right after the episode aired and said, you know, that was really funny, but you're right. I should not have watched that.
You warned him. You warned him.
I did.
Guys, if you have not seen that episode, let me go ahead and strongly encourage you to do so unless you are a member of Todd's family. and I hope that you're watching season three. And I'm going to have to hop off because I have to do that other call. But this has taken us to somewhere in the range of an hour 15 plus. So that's about a standard ep. And even though it was ass backwards and we're all over the place, and I have absolutely no idea what the sound quality is going to be like from chunk to chunk. I can't wait to hear it all stitched together Frankenstein style. And Todd, you guys, if I think we brought it up very early on when we were doing our MASH together, that we had done an episode of Todd's podcast together, which is kind of a fun companion piece to this because we really dive deep into our mutual obsession with movies. And also, you should check out Film Pigs, which is the kind of sketch and movie review show that Stephen Falk and Todd do together with friends. And and would you want to tell everybody like places they can see and hear that stuff?
Sure. Well, the podcast that you're referencing is called The Toncast, which is on iTunes. The Film Pigs, the web series is on a website called Geek Nation. But you can go to filmpigs.com and link to all that stuff that we do, because we have podcasts and movie commentaries and all that BS.
Love it.
Yeah. We're nerds.
Love it. And you're on, and your Twitter handle is?
It is, people get so mad at me about this. It's Ton Sling Dog.
Yeah.
Because
T-O-N-S-L-I-N-G-D-O-G.
Two N's. Right? Two N's.
Two N's.
Yeah.
God damn you.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah.
Even I am angry now.
Yeah, I apologize.
Awesome, my friend. Well, I hope to see you sooner than later, and thank you so much for finally finishing this with me.
I'm glad I got to. It was a lot of fun.
You're a boy of fall, not a boy of summer. Oh, that doesn't mean I don't still insist that you sing a little bit of Boys of Summer.
Shit. Right. The yeah, Don Henley element.
Right. I thought you were going to get away clean, and so did I. And then suddenly I remembered.
I am so like the dude from The Big Lebowski when it comes to the Eagles. all right, here we go. But I did see Don Henley in concert once.
Okay, well, that basically absolves you of anything that's about to happen.
All right, let me see. I don't know how it starts. I saw a deadhead sticker on a Cadillac. I thought, can't look back. I never look back. I can see you. Something's in the sun. Maybe you should put some lipstick on, baby. It's the summer, and the boys of summer will soon be gone. But I still will love you after the aforementioned boys of summer have gone. Huh?
I can't imagine a rendition more apt to never have that sung again until next summer. Buddy, thank you so much. And guys, I'll talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.